In 2012, Sarah Rule was a distinguished author and playwright, twice a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Max Ritvo, a student in her playwriting class at Yale University, was an exuberant, opinionated, and highly gifted poet. He was also in remission from pediatric cancer. Over the next 4 years, in which Ritvo's illness returned and his health declined, even as his productivity bloomed, the two exchanged letters that sparked with urgency, humor, and the desire for connection. They talked about everything: reincarnation, the afterlife, an Amtrak quiet car, good soup, all of it in the letters. The letters have now been published in a book entitled Letters from Max, A Book of Friendship, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Sarah Rule to the roundtable this morning. Sarah, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bring us to how this book ultimately came to be between you and Max Ritvo, and ultimately going back, what, 4 or 6 years, I guess.
Yeah, so Max Ritvo was my student at Yale. I teach playwriting at Yale, and Max at that time was a senior at Yale, and he was a very promising poet. And he walked into my classroom, and I was amazed by what a bright light he was, just incredibly smart and humane and well-read and funny. And at the end of the semester, it turned out he had a recurrence of Ewing sarcoma, which he'd had in high school. And Max and I developed a friendship over time. He graduated from Yale. He went to Columbia and got his MFA in poetry, and all during that time we wrote letters, and I partly wrote him letters to distract him from chemotherapy and immunotherapy and surgery, and partly we just shared a kind of profound connection, and I might have started as his teacher, but ultimately became his friend, and ultimately he became my teacher over time. And the book is a collection of essays, in a way, letters, poems. In a way, it's part memoir. But Max and I started it when he was alive, and then I finished it when he died 2 years ago.
It seems as though between the two of you, there was really no topic that was off the table. You would just have a natural conversation.
Yes, he had an extraordinary ability to talk about soup and war and the afterlife and religion and poetry, all as though it was equally important. And also, I should say, with a sense of humor. So it wasn't as though we were sort of sitting in the dark scribbling out these awful, depressing letters. We really were expressing a great deal of joy, too.
There's one letter where you're talking about that I thought of, that you were, when you're talking about soup, and you ask who is making soup for you. Somebody should be making soup for you. And then you say, P.S., also, I know you missed New York, but my neighbor just dislocated his finger trying to kill a cockroach. So there is an effort.
Which is true.
But there is an effort to cheer up here as well.
Yeah. Yes, and Max actually was part of an experimental comedy troupe, which is part of why I admitted him into my playwriting class. Even though he was a poet and didn't have experience writing plays, I thought, oh, he's a comic, and if you kind of mix together poetry and comedy, you sort of get a play. And I think Max was, you know, always desperate to amuse people, and particularly when he was sick, it was one of his ways of caretaking for people around him, was amusing them.
In the book, you certainly see this friendship grow. And I'm curious to ask you in two ways. And the first being, what is it like when compiling the book to look at that friendship evolve?
It's sort of overwhelming. You know, when Max was alive, we organized the book by subject matter. And then after he died, I ended up rearranging it by chronology, partly because I found it moving to watch a friendship evolve, you know, from a first letter to a professor that begins the usual way, you know, Professor Rule, I'm going to be late for this class, to this very transparent conversation about the afterlife and death. And I hope Max would approve of the way it's ordered now. But I think, you know, reordering the letters and also writing about Max was a way of grieving and also a labor of love and a hope to put more of his words into the air, because he's also just a genius poet. And I think of the letters book in a way as like a gateway drug to Max's poetry. He also had another book of poetry out called The Final Voicemails recently that's really beautiful.
Tell us about the in the decision to make it a book, when did that come about, and did that really change the tone in any sense that there were people listening in to your conversation, if you will?
I don't think it changed the tone that much, although we certainly had this intention to really keep writing. I mean, I think in a way it increased the discipline of writing, but I don't think it changed the tenor of our conversations. I think we decided to make a book of the letters maybe 2 years into writing to each other. So at that point, there were probably 200 letters. And it just seemed like there was such a wealth of good dialogue between the two of us that it seemed we should. At the beginning, we just thought, we'll make a little handmade book and give it to our friends. But the more we wrote, we thought, no, this is actually a book.
In that thinking that it's actually a book, what did you both have ideas on what you thought it would be in the sense of what people would get out of it and what you hoped they would get out of it?
I think we both hoped that the book would be of comfort to somebody who was going through something hard, you know, that it could be comforting to someone who had lost someone or somebody who was going through a struggle, someone who was in a hospital waiting room with nothing to read. I think Max was horrified by the thought that it would be like a Lifetime movie, you know, with a wise mentor, and he didn't like cancer narratives and really wanted to be known for his words and his work. And my hope is that the book highlights just Max's gorgeous imagination and his genius and opens the door so that more people read Max's poetry.
It certainly tells us about friendship. It certainly tells us about mortality. But there's also a great deal in here between the two of you about art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that discussion.
Yeah, I mean, we were always talking about poetry and, you know, as I said, he, or maybe I didn't say this, but he often turned teachers into colleagues just very quickly because he was really quite something and had a lot of relationships with teachers where they would share work with each other. So I wasn't alone in giving Max a draft of a play and then he'd give me a draft of a poem. And it was extraordinary to have that kind of dialogue between a teacher and a former student. I think it happens sort of once in a lifetime.
When you have something like that, and especially at the time of someone's passing, I imagine that's really powerful to have that as a memory.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Max's friendship was an incredible gift to me. And I always felt like when I did get to visit him near the end of his life, and what always struck me was that there was always a feeling of joy seeing Max, even if he was in incredible pain. There was something about who he was, how fully he lived life, how he was writing up to the very end that was incredibly inspiring. I mean, I think at the end of his life, he said to his mother, "That's it, I can't write anymore. I'm ready to go." And, you know, his mom said, "Do you think you've..." And he said, and she said she understood. And then he said, "Do you think I've fought hard enough?" And she said, "I do." And then she ultimately let him go. And to me, it's so moving. It's so hard. So hard for the family. So hard for Max's friends. He also got married. So for all of his dear ones, so hard. And we have his words. We have his memories. And the book is a way to, I guess, write more of him down and let his words speak for themselves also so that more people get to know Max.
It is amazing that productivity that he had toward the end. Really,
yeah.
So amazing.
I mean, most poets take a year, at least a year, to write a second book of poetry, and Max wrote this extraordinary book, Four Reincarnations, and he was so moved that he was able to get the galley copies in his hands and correct them right before he died. He didn't actually get to see the final copy, but he got to see the galleys because they rushed it at Milkwood Editions, which is this beautiful press. But also, he had all these unfinished poems that he was writing up until the point that he died. And then Louise Glick, his mentor, created a collection, The Final Voicemails, so that so that everyone could read those poems as well. And I shouldn't say unfinished. It's not that they were unfinished. It's just that he didn't have time to organize them into a book, which Louise did.
I would think, and I'll ask it as a question, which was the most difficult part in writing for you, writing the end when Max was no longer in the conversation?
Yes, absolutely. And he says, he talks at a point about death being the longest, most uncomfortable silence in the world, and how the dead person inflicts it on everyone he's ever known. But what I find is that there's also a listening quality that Max had that was really profound and really important to him. And my desire was to try to get at a kind of listening spirit, even though Max wasn't with me while I was finishing the book, for it to be some kind of collaboration, if it could be.
The book is beautiful. It is entitled Letters from Max, a Book of Friendship. It is published by Milkweed Editions. Sarah Rule, a great pleasure to
have
you on the program. Thank you very much. Be well.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Letters from Max, a Book of Friendship, published by Milkweed Editions. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.